we can see the negatives, and there's a lot of times, and I'm guilty of this too, of saying the church hasn't prepared us for this. The church doesn't teach us sound doctrine, or the church doesn't teach us confessionalism enough. The church doesn't teach us church history so that I know where we came from, and not everything started after 1952 with the microphone being taken up by Billy Graham. That there is something that happened beforehand that led him to that microphone. And no, it wasn't just Alexander Graham Bell, it'd be Nikola Tesla, but that's a different history thread. What are we doing good? What are we doing great? And what can we keep that on? And then what should we just stop? What's something so negative that there's something I in the pew, not the church, not the capital C church, not my church, lowercase c. What can I do good, and what can I do bad, and stop that? Where's my sanctification? I need you to sanctify me here.
Well, I mean, what we can do, I think there's a host of things that I think about. But I'll say the first thing is, how about let's start praying? I think there's been a huge dearth. Like, you ask any Christian about their prayer life, and 9 times out of 10, they all say, like, you know, like, if you ask, I have never asked a person, hey, how's your prayer life? And heard them say, yeah, pretty good. You know, most people. Like, and so that tells me that we don't actually believe that
there's a whole shelf for prayer books on this one. Yeah.
I'm always trying to read a prayer book all the time. I like all my stack of books. I always have at least one prayer book because I want to be reminding myself how important that is. And I think God chooses to work in response to prayer. I like to say it that way, that God chooses to work in response to prayer. And so if we're not praying, if we're not begging God to move in our country, in our state, which I'm much more interested in my state. I'm becoming more localist in that way. And in our local church, if we don't see God working if we're not begging God to work in our local church and our local community, why should we expect him to do so? And I think the big thing is prayer. You know, there was this book. I never read it, but I read the back cover of it. And I thought the concept was interesting of like concentric circles, praying circles. And I think it's probably some weird new agey thing, but that image kind of stuck with me of being like, start with your concentric circles of like praying the Lord's Prayer over yourself. You know, first praying that over myself, praying that God's name would be hallowed in my heart. That the glory of God would be my desire, my love, that his kingdom would grow in me first, that his will would be done in me, that I would want to do his will, and then move to the next circle, which is my marriage. And, you know, is my marriage successful? Well, how have I been praying over my wife and over my marriage? And how about my children? Am I praying daily over my children? And then working out to your church, praying for your leadership, not just your paid pastors, but your elders and deacons who are over your church, the people who keep watch over your soul, and then pray for your church as a whole, the community, the people. I think that's huge. And then working out to your city to be like, God, move mightily. And I think we also pray way too small about that. Like, God, can you maybe bring a few people to faith in our city? Like, how often do we pray, God, give us this city? Like, give us this city, not like us as in our little kingdom, but your kingdom. We want to see this city become a new Jerusalem, become a Christian city, whatever your definition of that is, whether it's with all that stuff, but that God would move in this city and in this, and in my state and in my country and in my world, like to be praying those things over our areas closest to us, and then working our way out. The second thing I think we need to do is, I think we need to, and this is where I would say, I'll say one thing you need to stop doing, and I'll put it, it's actually a positive, but I'll follow your system and do it as a negative. We need to stop expecting that someone else is going to raise our kids. We need to stop expecting that someone else is going to raise our kids. Mm-hmm. It is not. I'm sorry. It's not your Sunday school teacher's job to teach your kids about the Bible. They get one day a week. That's even less than if your kid goes to a public school. And even there, like, even if you get, send your kids to a great Christian school, that's a classical education model because those are the best ones, then even if you're doing that, I'm sorry, your audience doesn't know me. I do this. I joke in hyperbole about how my ideas are all the best ideas. I don't actually look down on anyone who does otherwise. That's part of my shtick. But like, even if you have the best school, the best Christian school in the world, it's not going to work unless it's being reinforced at home. And so I think things like catechisms are so important for catechizing your children, by which I mean actual catechisms. And there's the New City Catechism is a really simple introduction. They also, Founders Ministry, which is a Reformed Baptist wing of the Southern Baptist Church. They have a really good catechism for children. And just get those and start teaching them catechisms, and then start and read the Bible with them regularly. The older they get, the more intense your biblical training should get with them. And then the pushback always is like, well, I don't really know. And I know that they're experts. And I'm like, man, I taught my youth group apologetics last year. I am an idiot when it comes to apologetics, but I learned so much by doing that. Sometimes teaching is the best way to learn. You're going to, while you're catechizing your children and you're trying to stay like two questions ahead of them, you're going to find that your own knowledge is going to be growing, and your study of the Bible is going to get deeper, and you're going to find that you're going to get deeper in teaching them. And so don't be afraid of being not an expert. That's why you have pastors to ask them questions. But don't expect someone else, even your pastor, even your youth pastor. I mean, as a youth pastor, I'm going to tell you, the biggest frustration I have is parents who expect me to be teaching their kids. Like, no, I get them one, maybe 2 days a week. You get them every day. You need to be doing the teaching. You need to be raising them in the faith. And the only ones, and honestly, the ones that I have the most success with are the ones who are getting reinforcement at home. And so they're desiring to hear more of the words. So they're ready when I start teaching them. But it started with their home, not with me. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's a big thing. Is like, if the next generation is going to be it, if the next generation is the future church, then we need to stop expecting someone else to raise it up.
I think that's very Americanized of us, is you know, we have this assembly line process where it's like, oh, it's the pastor's job. We pay him. I'm going to bring my unbelieving friend to church, and that's how they're going to get saved, through osmosis of great teaching. It looks like he didn't get it. So I'm going to go to the welcome line. Hi, Pastor, how's it going? This is my friend, Josh. Josh is an unbeliever. All right. See you later, Pastor.
Yeah. Good luck.
You're with Josh. Yeah. Absolutely not. You know, it's the desire for us to laud the early church should always be taken with a grain of salt, because they weren't perfect, but they had to get converts through the gumption of going out to people who might turn them in to get killed and tell them, have you heard about Jesus? He's actually Lord, not Caesar. And so, it's not the pastor's job. It's not the youth pastor's job to train children. It's not your teacher's job. Yeah. If you go to government schools
to a private school
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it's one of those where I tell my children, my goal is to instill in my children the ability to fail. And it's a hard concept, especially for parents that have expectations of educational excellence for good, not, oh, we're going to do this because China's doing this and we want to compete with them. I want my children to be well-rounded. I want them well-rounded to fail. And so if I will allow them to say, I don't know. Well, yeah. I mean, that's why we're at school, is to go and learn. If you didn't know your fives times table, then we would just move on because you already knew it. And so when we get our children asking us, can you really explain to us what the Trinity is? And you go, let dad have a week to read a book. I mean, what are our kids going to do? Are they going to take to Twitter and lambaste us for being a terrible father? I mean, maybe that they're pretty tech savvy, but they shouldn't have phones at whatever age that they're going to ask you about the Trinity. But we should have the humiliation, in the proper form, yeah, to say, I don't know, let me look into that, yeah, from that perspective. Yeah. And also say, I can kind of explain this, but it is a hard concept, or, I've never went through the Western confessions. Let's find a song and sing them. And
yeah,
what I did when I did that was, all right, we're going to take the first day of the week and we're just going to listen. And then the second day I'm going to talk about it. And I'm just going to lay it all out there for you to ask questions about and do a Q&A. And hopefully you ask all the questions that I know only the answers to. And if you have young enough children, they're not that smart to be able to ask you the really hard questions. They only ask you the hard questions when it's 9:35 at night and yep, you're really tired and they're in bed. That's the only time they ever become stoic philosophers. And you think, maybe I'm going to lose them to the devil if I don't answer this question on the fully God and fully man avenues of Jesus here. So I
think, yeah, you know, this whole, we live in such a trust the experts culture,
right,
is very much. And I think it's easy, especially to mock that.
Hopefully that's over.
Having a couple of years of experience of where trusting the experts didn't turn out well for us. But I think we're both Austrians here, right?
I may have mentioned praxeology a couple times.
A couple times. Yeah.
In the past episodes.
Yeah. but I, you know, it's division of labor is good. Like, there are people who are better suited to spend their time studying certain things and to focusing on certain things. Division of labor is good. It becomes a problem when we start to think in terms of trust the experts. Like you said, here's my unbelieving friend, get him, pastor. This is why actually one of the first conversations I had with my youth group about evangelism was, if you expect me to grow this youth ministry by evangelism, it won't happen. Because I said, I am a weird adult with a beard. Random high schoolers are not going to want me to come up to them and talk to them. And if you just hand them off to me and say, you talk to them, they are never going to answer my calls or my texts. Like, the only reason you guys are willing to talk to me is because there's an established relationship that was established in the church. This is a thing that people don't like to talk about with youth ministry, but youth pastors are the worst at evangelizing children. Like, this is just it's an irrational expectation. But I think there's also a sense in which pastors should not be evangelizing as much as the rest of the church are. There's this expectation that they should be, that I don't think is rational. Because, hey, here's the deal. Most of my friends, most of the people I talk to are Christians. Where do you meet people? You meet people at work. I work with Christians. You meet people at community events. My community events are all Christian community events. You meet them with hobbies. All my hobbies are studying the Bible. So there's like, I don't meet non-Christians. When I do, I am expected to represent Jesus well and to seek to pray for them and to reach them with the gospel. And I do have neighbors, but like, I am not going to come in contact with as many unbelievers as you are, as you, the person. And I was saying this to my youth group, but I think pastors need to start having frank conversations with their church and say, with you, I don't talk to as many unbelievers as you do. And so you are actually far more suited to sharing the gospel with unbelievers than I am. So instead of waiting for me to do it, let's have conversations about how you can do it. And let's start really small. Like, one of the things our church is doing right now is we're talking about, it's called personal risks. We're saying we want everyone to, I think everyone in the church it's an average of like, I think they say, I think it's like five, like, I don't know, like it's a small area. I forget what the number is, but it's like, we're trying to do in 5 years, so many thousand personal risks in our congregation. And like, people are like, okay, so what's a personal risk? A personal risk is telling a person that you're a Christian. A personal risk is inviting a person to church. A personal risk is reading your Bible at work so that people see you. You know, I know someone who works front desk at a YMCA, and she just reads the Bible and talks. And when people are like, oh, what are you reading? Well, she tells them about it. Like, that's a personal risk. And like, starting small and being like, it doesn't mean you have to go out and become Billy Graham. It means you just have to be ready to represent Jesus, to be an ambassador for Christ everywhere you go. And that's how the church is going to grow. And I think the same thing applies to your family. Like, it's fine having people who have expertise in youth ministry, or having expertise in children's ministry, or having expertise in catechisms, like people who write books on catechisms, who write books on Trinity and deep theology. It's good. That's fine. Like, that division of labor is good, but that does not let you off the hook for raising your own children. And the truth is, the stats are in, and the most important thing in the life of a child being raised in the faith is the active participation of their parents, and especially their father, because reality is sexist in their life. Reality is sexist. We got to deal with it. The active participation of their father in their life, and especially their spiritual growth, is a huge factor in their faith journey and coming to and staying in the church. And so, trust the experts is not an excuse for not being a Christian, you know, and doing the work over the area that you're given.